Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
For as many decades as Alaska has been pumping crude from the North Slope, state leaders have longed to also monetize the vast amounts of natural gas that have been reinjected into the oil fields. Nearly every governor since the 70s has declared a gas line deal was imminent, only to have it fall apart. Is the current iteration of a gas line plan any different? Alaska lawmakers join us to discuss the current proposal and their thoughts about whether or not this plan is viable today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. I remember covering the press conference of then-Governor Frank Murkowski in 2006 when he held up some documents and said, "I have in my hand the contract for a gas line from the North Slope." Even NPR reported that Murkowski had reached a deal with three major oil companies to build a $20 billion pipeline. That was 20 years ago, and certainly wasn't the first time an Alaska governor had declared that North Slope gas would soon be moving to market. Differing ideas through the years, a rail line, a pipeline to Canada, tankers, and of course an 800-mile line to Tidewater has been oft presented, never realized. So what's different about this current proposal, and are we any closer to selling gas as well as ensuring that the vast majority of Alaskan citizens along the rail belt won't be in the cold and dark in coming years because Cook Inlet runs out of gas supplies? On the line from Juneau with us today is Senator Kathy Geisel. Senator Geisel is an Anchorage Republican and the Senate Majority Leader. Also with us is Representative Chuck Kopp, who is also an Anchorage Republican, and Representative Kopp is the State House Majority Leader. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
It's great to be here.
Thanks, both of you. We also, I want to note that we invited a representative from Glen Farne, the private developer that owns 75% of the project, to be on the show today, but they were not able to make someone available. So I want to give a quick recap of the current gas line project. Glen Farne is 75% owner. The state owns 25% of the project. The plan is to first develop a more than 800-mile pipeline to deliver gas to Alaskans. Glen Farne's website says first gas will be delivered in 2029. The second part of this plan is to build a liquefaction plant to export LNG. The two phases are said to be financially independent. Glen Farne has announced numerous non-binding agreements, letters of interest from Asian countries about potential purchases, and also conditional awards with an impressive list of pipeline construction companies. Glen Farne also said last year that they would make the all-important final investment decision by the end of 2025. That was bumped to February. Now it is mid-March. No decision yet. No word on when it will happen. So, where does this leave us today? Senator Geisel, state leaders would certainly like to see a gas line project, but what's your assessment on where this current version is and how that compares to past projects that failed?
Well, Lori, I remember well when oil started flowing and the headline in the Anchorage Times said gas pipeline is next. So, yes, this has been long time desired. It's still desired today in the Alaska legislature. I have chaired the Senate Resources Committee now for 10 years, and this has been a subject before my committee over that time. Where is it now? Well, you mentioned $20 billion 20 years ago. Well, our estimate in about 2014, when we had a project that was led by the three producers, Exxon, BP, and Conoco, that estimate was $60 billion. Now, at that time, of course, we didn't have any tariffs. Today, we have tariffs. We actually don't know what the final cost projection is for this project, and that's really the status of it right now. You mentioned that Glen Farne is the lead on the project now. That is true. They have, between Glen Farne and AGDC, they have formed a overarching entity called 8-STAR, which Glen Farne has 75% of, AGDC has 25% of. And they are going out and assessing who's interested in purchasing gas from this pipeline and who would be interested in helping to construct it. But that's really all we know. This is being led now by a private company, Glen Farne, and they are holding confidential all of the fiscal data. This contrasts with the project that was led by ExxonMobil in 2014. At that time, again, as chair of the Senate Resources Committee, we had detailed reports on the cost, procurement measures, stages of development all along the way. So this is quite a contrast, and that's part of the challenge for the legislature in this particular project development, because we don't know what the costs are, and therefore it's difficult for us to assess what our position should be in terms of fiscal benefits, tax reductions, things like that. So we're in a challenging position right now. Things are not transparent as they have been in the past, and so that is a challenge.
Thank you, Senator Geisel. Representative Kopp, turning to you, give us your take here. What is your stepped-back assessment of this project currently, and are there changes you want to see before it proceeds?
Thank you, Lori. So in 2006, yes, we nearly had the deal done. Governor Murkowski did, in fact, have an agreement with our neighbors in Canada, with Yukon, Northwest Territories, Alberta, and all it took was for the incoming administration to carry that out. And in an unfortunate move for Alaska, some politics got in the way. We lost that opportunity, and as we all remember, what happened in the months that followed is fracking started to develop as a way to get gas and oil out of North Dakota, and pretty soon so much gas and oil was found there that all interest was lost in the Alaska-Canada line, and our state government had backed away from that. So that was an opportunity lost, and here we are 20 years later, and I can tell you that today we have never been closer than we are now. And the reason why we know that, Lori, is this time the project is being led with private capital and it's real contracts in place and a clear path to construction. So I think the key right now for our state, and what I'm hoping we've learned historically, is that stability matters and not to lose the momentum. The legislature was very intentional and specifically granted the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, who holds the 25% interest of the state in the AKLNG project. We gave this corporation the ability to enter business arrangements, to form joint ventures and subsidiaries, and to protect confidential commercial information. And when you think about it, Alaska LNG competitors and customers would love to find out what the project costs details are. And that's one of the reasons to keep it confidential. And all potential investors in the project, even now including the state, will have access to information needed to make an informed investment decision should we choose to become an investor. Right now we hold what's called an equity position, 25% of the project, and we'll have opportunities to expand on that. But the first phase, phase one, already has upstream agreements with the producers to sell gas, with Pantheon, with Hillcorp, with Exxon. Those contracts are signed and in place. The gas will be sold to the line. Downstream for in-state, we have NSTAR and Donlin that have already signed agreements. And we have other opportunities out there that could be large energy users that would also enable that. And as Senator Geisel previously commented on, other phases of the project that will ultimately be subsequent to the first stage of the pipeline. So I'm encouraged by that. Another thing, Lori, that I think this is real is we see our borough mayors in the taxing jurisdictions that this pipeline would go through are actively working in a tax working group to come to consensus on what that tax structure will be through the North Slope Borough, through the Fairbanks North Star Borough, through the Mat-Su Borough and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. And we expect consensus from them soon, and we expect a bill to be introduced by the administration or the legislature soon addressing the tax structure for the bill. So for various reasons, I believe we're closer than we've ever have been before. I would also note a large announcement from South Korea of $350 billion in U.S. investment that was announced yesterday. And tens of billions of that are directed to go to LNG investment. And we know that there is no more secure route than the North Pacific Basin route coming from Alaska to Asia. The Gulf Coast region has to go through the Panama Canal and come up through the Southern Pacific and very contested waters. So, you know, it's thousands of miles longer coming from the Gulf Coast. Alaska is very direct in comparison. For all those reasons, I think we're competitive at the right time.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kopp. I want to remind our listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. Today, we're talking about the potential for an LNG gas line from the North Slope, both to deliver gas for Alaskans along the rail belt, as well as to send it to Tidewater for export. Senator, you chair the Senate Resources Committee and sponsored a new bill that calls for more transparency, would eliminate a tax exemption for this project, and seeks to impose a surcharge on gas processing plants. Flesh out the details of this bill for us.
Well, thank you, Lori. That's Senate Bill 275. Lori, as Representative Kopp just discussed, in 2012, 13, 14, the legislature did really empower AGDC to proceed with virtually no legislative involvement, which at that time we were very comfortable with because, again, there was huge transparency. We knew the stages of development. We understood what would be required for the pipeline developers, in this case the three producers, to reach final investment decision. That's called FID. It's the point at which the estimates of cost are extremely precise. You know how much each screw, bolt, section of pipeline, section of welding material, all those numbers were very precise. So that is something you also brought up, that we had been hearing that Glen Farm would be reaching FID, final investment decision, by the end of 2025. And they have not, which is fine. I understand. You need to be precise at final investment decision. It should take time. You want to go slowly in the initial stages of a mega project like this. In asking Glen Farm about this, they said, well, FID is not an event. It's a process, and we'll get there when we get there, which is fine. But in the meantime, we're being urged to give tax concessions. So working with my team in the Senate, we are considering the return to Alaska for this gas development. Just like with oil, our budget depends on the return for the value of that oil. Gas is not particularly high priced, not like oil. And of course, we're experiencing the fluctuation of oil right now. But right now, the oil revenue provides about 30% of our budget. We have no expectation that gas will provide that kind of revenue to our budget. But we also are concerned that it may result in zero return to our budget. Now, it is true that the gas itself to heat our homes and to generate electricity is of significant value. But at the same time, if we're building a 42-inch pipeline to go from the North Slope down to South Central at the Anchorage area, where it will connect with NSTAR, we only need a trickle of gas going through that pipeline to meet the needs of the rail belt, the central section of Alaska from Kenai Peninsula up to Fairbanks. What will the cost per BCF be for that trickle of gas through a 42-inch pipeline? Really, the cost of that gas will significantly be less if the gas is of a huge volume filling that pipe and most of it is being exported. But when you talk with Glenfarne, they talk about the pipeline first, getting gas to Alaskans. Well, that gas to Alaskans, in our calculation, will probably be about $50 a BCF. So,
compare? And how does that compare to what we're currently paying?
Well, right now, out of the Cook Inlet, they're paying somewhere, NSTAR is paying somewhere around $15. That's a broad range number there, $14 to $16, somewhere in there. This gas will be exceedingly expensive if we don't have the export facility up and running day one. So that's what we're concerned about. The other thing that has come up is Representative Kopp mentioned Pantheon. Pantheon is an oil and gas development that is actually along the pipeline corridor. It's very close to the pipeline. Their interest is in developing the high-value product of oil. They have stated that they would be willing to give the gas to the pipeline for zero. Now that sounds great because maybe then the customers buying that gas will have a very low price. Well, our concern is that gas has a value to the state of Alaska as a resource. What will we get in terms of a royalty for that gas if it's being priced at zero? So Senate Bill 275 addresses these kinds of questions, Lori.
And do you, Congressman Nick Begich told lawmakers recently not to be a roadblock for the project. Do you think he was aiming at this particular Senate bill when he said that?
I don't know what he was aiming at. You know, as I said before, with a mega project, the rule of thumb is that mega projects will be over cost and over time. That is, they will not produce on time, which of course adds to cost. That's why it's so critical at this point, the beginning, to go slow, to check every piece of this development project. And that means for us as legislators that we check every piece of what kind of return the state is getting for the subsurface resource that we have. And that, in this case, is gas.
And Representative Kopp, how about you? How are you viewing this bill? Do you support it? Do you want to see more details about the state's commitments as well as potential profits?
Lori, so one thing I absolutely agree with Senator Geisel on is that oversight is an important function of state government. And I know we both want this gas line project. So I think that the real question is, are we recognizing that Alaska is facing an energy crisis now? Our NSTAR Natural Gas President John Sims told the legislature on January 27th that the AKLNG project is the only project that has the potential not only to secure energy for us right of way. We're all very aware, as you pointed out, Lori, the dwindling gas supply in Cook Inlet and the fact that even the current signed contracts, the people who are supposed to be delivering that gas have balked at that, literally stepped back, said we don't know if we can actually deliver that through 2033. This is the only project that has the potential to absolutely make sure that we can heat our homes and schools and military bases and our businesses, and ultimately the potential to reduce the cost of energy. That's coming from the NSTAR president, John Sims. So in light of that, I would say, yes, oversight is important. We are also in an energy crisis. Does the bill do anything to accelerate the project? And, you know, the legislation clearly is looking at more oversight, more transparency. But I would go back to what I said earlier, that the legislature recognized that empowering AGDC to make some of these decisions on behalf of the state was important to attract private sector enterprise needed to develop a project this big and complex. And like the senator said, she was right. The the leaders at that time of these projects, who sadly have now passed on, were very highly regarded, well-trusted people, and sometimes, you know, in that type of an environment, you can unwittingly maybe give away some of your oversight because there is a very strong relationship. But the legislature was intentional in empowering AGDC to make decisions, and that's exactly what AGDC did with Glen Farm. And now is the bill moving the goalposts halfway through the game that we're in? That's what I would ask. So does that tell potential investors coming to Alaska that we're a safe bet? You know, are we becoming more unreliable? Is the commercial information that is routinely kept confidential in a competitive market, you know, will that now be at risk? You know, we have no more ability to directly manage this project than we do the ability to manage the permanent funds investments. But, you know, I would just say, again, that all potential investors, including the state, will have access to investor information to make an informed investment decision if we choose to make one. But right now, the state is not at risk at all for $1 in this project. It is entirely, all the risk is with the developer. And the state only has an upside equity gain in it. If we choose to become an investor, then yes. But right now, even if we don't invest, we are going to get considerable royalty revenues and production taxes. And it's our gas. So we're still selling the gas. The question is are we going to experience a rate of return on the economics of the project? And if we choose to take that investment piece, we'll have an opportunity to do that as well. So the legislation, again, I'm all for oversight. My concern is I want to keep this project viable. It's critical. It's operating under the rules that are currently in place that the legislature has set. And if the legislature changed those rules right now, I'm concerned that it could freeze up the willingness of investors at a critical moment when it seems like everything is coming together in this. I would also note that our largest labor organizations from plumbers and pipefitters and welders and the umbrella AFL-CIO are very, very close to signing project labor agreements on this project. I expect they could have an announcement as early as this week on that, and I've heard that from the heads of the negotiations with Glen Farm, the developer. And these things wouldn't all be happening right now if this project wasn't right at the doorstep of moving forward. So I'm encouraged.
Okay.
All
right. So, and Senator, there has been some backlash to your proposed legislation already. Fairbanks Republican Senator Rob Meyer says he appreciates some of it, such as giving lawmakers more leverage to audit the gas line agency. But he also said the fact the bill exists at all could have a chilling effect on investors. How do you see this? I've talked to many Alaskans who express frustration that we seem too often to sort of go hat in hand to the big oil and gas developers as if we're asking for favors rather than leveraging the state's resources for the benefit of residents here. Alaskans criticize the tax rates and revenue gained as too often too low. So what are your thoughts about this idea that it's bad to have any legislation right now because investors might run away?
Well, Lori, you just presented the two sides of the issue. You just presented what Alaskans are saying about what we get for our resources. Now that we're talking about royalty now. We're talking about production taxes. This is a very low value product. Gas is not like oil. And as I mentioned earlier, one of the potential gas producers is saying, oh, we'll give the pipeline the gas for zero. That means the state of Alaska gets zero royalty. The state of Alaska has no production tax defined for a product that's being sold as zero. Right now, for every dollar cost for the MCF of gas, the state of Alaska would get 15 cents. Is that enough? We need to look at this. We need to have it modeled. And that's exactly what the Senate Resources Committee is doing by putting this bill on the table. I totally agree. I'm very much aware of the natural gas crisis that we're facing. This is not unlike what we were facing in 2014. Actually, in 2010, we passed legislation that actually gave cash credits to companies to come into Cook Inlet and develop gas. We got a lot of companies coming in. Many of them borrowed heavily. Well, we couldn't afford to pay them cash for the expenses that they were incurring. We had to repeal that law. I was part of repealing that law, and it was brutal because they had gone out to lenders who now were left holding a bag for a company that could not pay those things back. We got no increased gas, significant increased gas as a result. There is more gas in Cook Inlet. And I do also expect some announcements in the very near future that some of that gas is going to go under development that can bridge this time of waiting for either imported gas, which, by the way, Glenn Farne is working with NSTAR. We've heard these two before. They are working on an import facility on the Kenai Peninsula in the Nikiski area. Lori, I would ask, Glenn Farne is looking at importing. They're working on an import project. They're also working on this gas pipeline. We'll see which one actually comes to fruition, Lori.
Well, and I do have some questions about that very thing. We do need to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion about the LNG gas line proposal with Republican Senator Kathy Geisel and Republican Representative Chuck Kopp. We'll also get to some phone calls as talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Hi. I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the proposal for a liquefied natural gas line from the North Slope. Today, our guests are Republican Senator Kathy Geisel, who is the Senate Majority Leader, and Republican Representative Chuck Kopp, who is the House Majority Leader. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Stu is in Eagle River. Hello.
Thank you, Lori. Hello, Senator Geisel and everyone else. My question is this. What we saw with the line down the Aleutians to provide internet, and then Elon Musk shows up with his Starlink and basically nullifies the need for it. Everybody likes to spend money. We know governments do that. As soon as people smell money, a lot of people jump on board because we want some too. But guys, they got that new age nuclear reactor going in at Eielson Air Force Base. Public radio did a big show and spent 30 minutes talking about it. Nome's getting the next one. Guys, are we putting money into something that is not going to really be needed in 10 years or 5 years? Senator Geisel, please, you have to be up on all that stuff because we all know the government likes to spend money, and then they'll spend money to replace what they just spent money on. I've seen it over and over again at community councils. So please be aware of that. I don't want to get fleeced. And this pressure is so strong now from people who are all about spending money that I'm very suspicious. Thank you.
Senator Geisel.
Well, thanks for your comments, Steve. I am a big fan of nuclear, the micronuclear that is going in Eielson, and there is consideration for Nome. It is at least 10 years out. I'm still a fan. I'm also a fan of large hydro, which is durable infrastructure that goes on for more than 100 years. Juneau, where I'm at right now, is being powered by hydroelectric projects built more than 100 years ago by the mining industry here. Yes, there are other options for energy. They take time as well, however. But what you have identified, spending money without really knowing what the end product is going to be, that's exactly what the Senate is scrutinizing right now. We want this gas pipeline to go, but it's got to be something that will actually benefit financially and with energy Alaskans.
All right. Thank you. We're going to stick with the phones for just a moment. Don is in St. Croix. Hello, Don.
Good morning.
Did you have a question?
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
And good morning, Congressman and Senator. My name's Don Peters. I was working on Diane Benson's campaign back in 05. One of the things that we were really adamant about in the Green Party was the capability of extracting the hydrocarbons during the LP transfer. Is that something that's in the legislation? Because that's 118 different hydrocarbons that we can extrapolate and still make an extra dime off of for the citizens of Alaska.
I'm not sure of your question. Are you senator or representative?
Well, I think what Don may be referring to is if we're going to provide energy to rural Alaska, that is the areas off the rail belt, we would need to use some of that gas to create propane. And that actually is a piece that I'm concerned about. As that pipeline comes down past Fairbanks, there needs to be a spur line, first of all, built that goes from the pipeline into the city of Fairbanks. That's extra cost that's going to be on the city of Fairbanks, which I'm concerned about. But we've also talked about gas along the Yukon River. That would require a production facility to turn some of that gas into propane. Again, another expense, but a critical one to actually get gas assets to other parts of Alaska as well. But thanks for the question, Don.
Yeah, and Lori, I'll just jump in on that one as well. I think it is a great question, and it shows the importance of this gas treatment plant and its ability to strip out hydrocarbons that the market needs in other areas besides propane that can really meet energy communities and also construction heavy industry needs, the gases they need for welding and things like that. But this project is what makes that happen. This is a transformational, once-in-a-generation project. And Alaska, as this gentleman has alluded to, we are in need of a game changer, not only to end out migration, but to bring young families and people back to our state, create jobs across many sectors, and frankly, to bring out the broader economic activity associated with a mega project that our whole state would see. It's not just about the initial line itself, but all the secondary economic activity that the state would benefit from. And there are many other sources of energy and power that would come from this to our heavy industry users, including our miners and other large industrial projects that could benefit from this type of power generation.
All right. We have a question by email. Martin writes, gas line aside for a moment, other Arctic nations, particularly Russia, are building bigger and bigger LNG tankers now with ice breaking capacity. Is there any reason that Alaska's North Slope is unsuitable for this mode of export? Martin writes, personally, I don't think the gas line will ever pencil out. And his question, you know, reminds me of the fact that there have been so many versions of different transport concepts. We've talked a bit about that, sending gas in a pipeline to Canada to feed into a system there, moving gas by tanker from the North Slope, as Martin suggests, eliminating the need for an 800-mile pipeline, a possible rail consideration. Are any of these other concepts still being considered, or do either of you think they should be?
Well, you know, Mead Treadwell, he's the former lieutenant governor, has a company called Kiluk, Q-I-L-U-K, and they proposed several years ago exporting directly off the North Slope into the tankers that you are referring to, or the emailer refers to, Lori, that project is still under consideration. In fact, I just heard of another idea along those lines, and that is a gentleman who is apparently close friends of President Trump, who has partnered with a Russian company, again, to build these kinds of tankers and export offshore. Our challenge offshore is that we have a very shallow offshore for quite a distance out. So there would have to be a pipeline. Then, of course, you have the ice scoring. As the ice freezes, it can scrape the bottom. There are challenges. All certainly can be overcome. Engineers can do anything if they have enough money. So all still viable ideas. Another idea I spoke with the Alaska Energy Authority about recently was putting in a high voltage DC line, generating electricity on the slope, extending it down to Fairbanks, where it would connect to our transmission system. That costs about $1.5 million a mile, but is definitely doable.
Representative Kopp, your thoughts here.
Yeah, Lori. So the export off the North Slope has been considered for decades, actually, and Senator Geisel did lay out the case really well, that it's going to be cost intensive with the dredging, the channeling necessary, but also a very important consideration is the whaling activity of the communities of the North Slope borough, and that is going to be a significant hurdle to overcome their right and their authority to subsistence whaling, and that is protected federally. So those things are all factors, which is why the cost structures we have seen actually make the pipeline very competitive with all the hurdles that would have to be overcome by direct export off the slope. Again, this project would give a secure in-state route through to Tidewater, and we believe would be operating in a right-of-way that's already permitted. And I would, you know, I think that's important that we're not talking about feasibility studies and permitting anymore. This is already done. It's in place. It's not theoretical. You can actually get your arms around it. The preliminary agreements with pipeline contractors, pipe manufacturers, North Slope producers, NSTAR and Donlin are all simultaneously moving forward on multiple commercial fronts, which I think gives us confidence that the private capital is speaking, the market is moving, and this is coming to fruition.
All right. Senator, the legislation you introduced, the Alaska Gasline Transparency and Accountability Act, one of the tenants seeks to make the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation disclose major investors and gas buyers, and that the corporation couldn't do business with foreign entities without legislative approval. What's the concern here?
Well, the concern, Lori, is that there is nothing that would prohibit Glen Farne at this point or AGDC to further sell ownership in this pipeline. And the equity ownership is where the profits are. So, Lori, while the state of Alaska holds 25% interest in that, we will have to buy in actual equity to receive real money. At this point, it's a pretty low ownership right that we have. Others will be able to buy in as well. I know Glen Farne is making provision through AGDC to allow, for example, other companies to buy part of the AGDC 25%, even individual Alaskans, I'm told. They're making provision that individuals could buy in. But it will be a hefty price, and of course it will dilute everyone else's ownership. It's a very complex structure, and that's what we're trying to get that information out to Alaskans.
All right. We are going to, Representative Kopp, did you want to weigh in there for a moment before we take another break?
Yeah, sure, Lori. I think that the question about foreign investment, the investment that we do know that we have heads of agreement with already and pending a final gas purchase agreement are with foreign entities. They're with South Korea, Taiwan, Japan, Thailand, I believe Malaysia, and big gas companies inside those. So I doubt the intent is to prohibit those. It's more to have some oversight. But I would be concerned about steering away possible buyers from this project when we are actively reaching out. In fact, I know AGDC is at an international energy summit right now in Japan, specifically looking for foreign buyers who want a secure shipment. The war in Iran has highlighted how important security is, and Alaska's strategic location with a short direct shipping free from, you know, any choke points or contested waters. And I wouldn't want to unintentionally do something that would prevent this project from coming to reality by introducing another layer of bureaucracy and preventing these gas sales agreements from occurring in a timely manner.
All right. We are going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on the proposal for an LNG line as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the LNG gas line proposal with Republican Senator Kathy Geisel, the Senate Majority Leader, and Republican Representative Chuck Kopp, the House Majority Leader. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Katie is in Homer. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hello.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I just had a little statement and a thought. So we got natural gas in Homer a while back, and it was going to be a great deal for everyone, right? We got assessed. You know, how many feet you got on your subdivision road, you had to pay an assessment. We changed all our appliances. We're like, okay, now we'll start paying this off because it's going to be a good deal. It's going to make us money. And about that time, they're like, oh, sorry, you guys, no more gas. So, you know, you hear the experts talking now and everyone's got their hand out. It's all about big money. And do I believe them? Like, how come they didn't know there wasn't going to be any gas? Like, how much do they really know about this? So that's, you know, I'd like to thank the legislators for asking for transparency, and it should be very transparent, and it should be a win-win. And if it's not, then it's not a good deal. And if we can't know the facts, then there's something shady about it. And I'm always impressed with the expertise and hard work and endless meetings and money that surround these big projects. But humans aren't the best at looking at big changes and looking ahead. And if you believe in science, it's pretty clear we should be leaving these fossil fuels on the ground, and we should be putting all this energy into renewables. So thanks for your time, and thanks for having this program on the radio.
All right. Thank you, Katie, for weighing in on your thoughts from Homer. I do want to continue on with a couple more phone calls because we are getting stacked up here. Let's go to Shawnee in Fairbanks. Hello.
Hello, this is Shawnee calling from Fairbanks.
Did you have a question?
My question is, first of all, thank you so much for hosting this on the public radio station. I think it's really valuable for the community members, especially since there's been such a lack of transparency around this project. And my main question has to do with, in terms of transparency, you know, the legislators are talking a lot about how this is going to help resolve the energy crisis we're having here in the state and get important energy supplies out to rural Alaskans and other Alaskans alike. But in the current plans that exist for this pipeline, there's really no plans for spurs or other types of supply lines to get that fuel to Alaskan communities that would benefit from it. And this includes big cities like Fairbanks. So I'm wondering, you know, if this is going to be something that benefits Alaskans more than external companies and exports, why is there no plan so far to make sure that that energy gets to Alaskan communities at an affordable price?
All right, Shawnee, thank you for the question. Senator and Representative, your response here.
Well, Lori, I appreciate Shawnee's question. We have offtakes guaranteed at Fairbanks, also on the Yukon River, And there is one, at least in the original plan, proposed at the MATSU. But Shawnee's exactly right. The cost of the spur, that's the pipeline that goes from the big pipeline into Fairbanks, will fall on the people, or the utility, actually, in Fairbanks, which is a concern to us. But Lori, I also need to clarify something that was misunderstood on a previous question. What the bill is prohibiting in terms of foreign ownership is exactly that, ownership. What Representative Kopp was talking about was customers for the gas. Of course, the worldwide countries are going to be customers, but we don't want China coming in and buying out Glenfarne, owning our pipeline, as China has done for ports in the U.S. Foreign countries are purchasing land in the U.S. We are attempting to prevent that in this bill. Again, thinking forward into the future.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you. Senator, Representative Kopp, your thoughts here about this.
Yes, a couple things. So Alaska does have an oversight interest even now. We have representation on the AGDC board. We have budget authority for AGDC that we can allocate or withhold. And certainly, as the senator is proposing with Senate Bill 275, we have legislative authority to become more prescriptive. And I think basically what we're talking about here is timing in relation to the project. What's that signaling? And the question is not really whether or not oversight is a good thing. I believe it is, but it's a matter of, are we adequately using the tools that we have that are in the law now, and when is the best moment to review? And I think immediately before a final investment decision is not an ideal time in the market. But I want to say that, you know, the caller said, you know, how are we benefiting from this? And I think it's an insightful question, because we don't want this just to be our state to happen to have a LNG project that passes through it and nothing more. But I think we see that's not the case because of how eagerly our municipalities have been partners so far in balancing the need for revenues with the transformational nature of this project, Lori. They're actively negotiating what that gas tax or property tax, however, ultimately, whatever they agree on, what that looks like, and making the project economic for those jurisdictions. They recognize the huge economic partnership and the synergy that's going to happen to the communities that it passes through, and they're working collaboratively with boroughs and municipalities to identify solutions that work for them and the state and the project that will be introduced soon in legislation.
And I do want to talk about that. Hopefully we can get to that in our final moments here. But we spoke a little bit about this earlier. The clock is ticking on Cook Inlet gas supplies for Rail Belt customers. Utilities have said imported gas is inevitable. Chugach and NSTAR are pursuing separate import projects. NSTAR and Glenfarne are working on a plan together, with imported gas projected to start in 2029, the same projected timeline as gas is supposed to start flowing from the North Slope. State regulators heard from Chugach officials that their project is further along, and that the NSTAR-Glenfarne proposal would have to be built from scratch. Are you comfortable with Glenfarne involved in both developing Alaska North Slope gas by 2029 while also importing gas purchased from somewhere else by 2029? These projects seem in competition. How transparent are these import project plans?
Well, I'll jump in there on that one. First, Lori, remember that Glenfarne is operating on the site that is already permitted for the export facility for the AKLNG. So their proposal is simply to be able to turn that around once we're at export capacity, but have an import facility as needed. They are able to supply through their proposed design about three times the volume of what the Marathon Oil Company facility is. That right now, NSTAR's reporting can only meet about 30% of the demand along the rail belt. So there is a concern about how much they're able to bring in, and looking, and also the control of the gas, whether it's wise to have it all be done by Hillcorp, both controlling the gas on the North Slope and in Cook Inlet, and having the import project, whether that's wise to have, you know, have that import terminal being a piece of that trifecta. So those are fair market concern questions. Ultimately, this question is being asked in front of the Regulatory Commission right now. Great article in the Anchorage Daily News.
Yes.
A few days ago, they're having these questions asked and answered. Ultimately, it comes down to what is good for the rate-paying customers as far as long-term reliability and gas supply. I think the Regulatory Commission will do a good job figuring that out, and I believe only one project will go forward.
Senator Giesel, your thoughts? You were talking earlier about there's the trickle coming from the North Slope, but now we're talking about two different projects. Well, what are your thoughts about all this?
Well, I'm thankful that the dockets are now before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I will remind listeners, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska stands in your stead, in your place, saying what gives the customer the best price here. They are looking out for you. You know, we were talking about transparency. Well, in talking with Glenfarne about this pipeline, they do need an export facility at the other end to sell the large volumes, which will lower the price for Alaskans. But it was only when the RCA docket came out, that is that proposal before the RCA, actually last week, that it is articulated that Glenfarne would build an import facility that could easily be flipped into an export facility. So what they would be doing is kind of building that simultaneous with the pipeline. It's unclear how they would manage both of those projects simultaneously, but well, the RCA is looking into this. I know they will make a wise choice. We recently restructured the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. So they actually have experts on the RCA making wise choices for consumers in Alaska.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Richard is in Dillingham. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Can you get to your question quickly? We only have a couple minutes left. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. My question to your guest concerns Gentry Beach and his agreement with the Russian energy giant Novatek to use Novatek's technology to create an export facility on the North Slope. What are their thoughts on Mr. Beach entering into this?
Senator Giesel?
Well, that's actually what I caught sight of. I think that came out a couple weeks ago. Yes, that's the interest. You know, it is possible that we could export off the North Slope. We'll see what this gentleman comes up with. I believe that they're talking about the same technology that actually is being used around the world, and certainly those vessels are already being built by Russia to export off their North Slope.
And Representative Kopp, you were talking earlier about municipalities and the taxes that they could gain from this, but we know that, yes, the communities along that 800-mile route could earn income from property taxes. As the state's budget has been cut repeatedly, municipalities are scrambling to cover local services. Governor Dunleavy last December said he wants legislation to reduce the property tax the partnership would pay to municipalities from that pipeline. The governor wants a reduction from 2% to 0.2%, a tenth of the current tax rate. This would be a 30-year tax reduction if written the way the governor wants. Former state senator and current Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Peter Michicki said that low rate isn't likely to win support from local governments, saying, quote, we're all supportive of an Alaska project, but it can't solely be on the backs of our local taxpayers. He said, I think there's a fair deal to be had, but a deal has to be born from facts, real math, and local impact data. Do you support this tax reduction the governor wants, Representative Kopp, or do you think it still needs work?
I defer to our borough mayors entirely, and I think it does need work. We have to have a tax structure, and maybe it's not a property tax structure, Lori. They could go through a gas volume tax by their, you know, the where the revenue increases to municipality based on the amount of gas moving through the pipeline. There's many different ways that I know the mayors are looking at this, and that's part of the legislative process. I look forward to a bill being introduced because, yes, we need to make sure that the municipal needs are met, those impact needs and the broader economic needs, mm-hmm. and that this is a win-win. We have been talking about getting this gas to market for decades, and we finally have the alignment, the private investment, the real demand, and I think a clear path forward. And I think this is our opportunity, and we should take it.
And Senator Giesel, in about 20 seconds.
In 2014-15, the mayors also got together, never came to agreement. Fairbanks has a very small piece of the pipeline going through their property, but they have a huge spur line to build. That text means a lot to them.
All right.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you both so much. Thanks to my guest today, Republican Senator Kathy Giesel, the Senate Majority Leader, and Republican Representative Chuck Kopp, the House Majority Leader. Thanks to our engineer on the board, Crystal Hyde, our producer is Emily Messner, our editor is Annie Feit, and on the phones, Wesley Early helped us out today. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.